The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 28th day of March, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow is down 90, S&P down 12, comp is off by 28, gold is down 14, crude's even down about 2%. So, big down day in the market. Yesterday, as we left you at the end of the radio broadcast, which, by the way, if you're new, welcome, glad to have you with us. If you're a repeat offender, welcome back. We drew this circle yesterday as price was pulling into the CFMA1, red overhead and falling. We said this is critical here. We'll see how this closes. We won't take action as it pulls into the MA1. We'll just wait to see what happens next. Next, we got a bearish close below. And then last night on the blog, if you don't know how to get to the blog from anywhere on the website, click visit our blog. And it just takes you there. Okay. So this is the chart. This is where we were last night when we snapped this picture. And then by the time we got around to making the After Dark video, which you can watch here, we talk about the potential for price to pull back up into this zone, to spend some time consolidating and then continuing the path of least resistance, which appeared to be down. That consolidation lasted for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, about 14 hours. Okay, all around the 1408, 1409 weekly trading zone. This morning it became pretty obvious pretty early on that we were headed for the 1399-1400, and we spiked right through that. And this point, we'll watch. We've got another 21 minutes left in this hourly candle, but 9091 starting to look like a possibility. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Okay. On the Dow, that sell-off, when we opened this morning, or prior to the open, in fact, since midnight, we've been bumping up against this weekly zone at 160, 165. We hit it. We hit it again. We hit it again. And we drew this little triangle this morning. And once we broke to the downside, we had a really nice move. We never got a pullback in here. Now, if you simply sold this pullback at 94, you had a drawdown of about 10-15 points, okay, which is equivalent to point and a half on the S&P. And then you stepped right into this, okay? Or maybe because there was a bearish tone, maybe because you had this developing over here, you weren't really interested in getting long over here, you just waited for the next short setup, which came in at 13.092 and took you right down to 13.017. From 0.92 to 0.017, that's about 70 points. That's about $350 per contract on the YM. Pays $5 per point. So very nice move. And we said that the next zone down, we were talking about this way up here. We said the next zone down on the Dow is 13,000, 1305. Now when we were perched up here, that looked like an awful long way to travel. In fact, from way up there, it looked like a 100-point trade, and that's just about what it's turned out to be. Okay, we'll see what happens in this little area right here. We're getting a pullback, a little consolidation here, not had a bullish cross. See, we had a cross here, and you know what? If you had actually bought this at 96, you could have picked up 10 points on that little head fake before it rolled over and got back to work doing what it was really up to, and that was trading lower. So, with all that said, I have nothing else to add. I talked on the blog last night a little more about BATS, about the high frequency trading, about how the market will be very quiet for a period of time and then just all of a sudden, boom. I mean, look at this drop. In the last 42 minutes, we've gone from 1401 all the way down to 1392. Okay? That's a 10-point move in 1 hour. Prior to that, in the previous 2 hours of trading, we went from 1401 to 14. We had 7 points in 2 hours, and then in 42 minutes we got 10 points. I talked a little bit about that on the blog last night, so by all means go out if you have time, take a read, and you okay?
I'm fine. Okay. That's Mike Reed.
Oh, hey, Mike Reed. How you doing?
Hi, Dwayne.
Good to have you with us, man. Let us get a recap out of the way, and then we'll chat a little bit, okay?
Sure.
All right. Michael, let me just go ahead and give you the camera and give you the mic and do your thing.
All right. I will just grab the whole thing and Make me the presenter. Yeah. Here we go. All right. Now, let's... there is one thing I wanted to show on the ES. Let's start with that, okay? I have a bunch of things on the Russell. There was one thing on the ES. Before I start anything, let me start the recorder here. All right. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, March 28th, 2012. It's Michael from CFRN. We're going to go through all the trades we went through this morning in the live trading room. The results, let's get those out of the way quickly. We are down one tick on the YM, and we're up six ticks on the Russell. Okay. We didn't take any ES trades. I'll show you where they would have set up in a few minutes. But I was really trading the Russell mostly this morning, and... I'll go through all those trades. If you are in here on a free trial, tomorrow night is our partners meeting. We go through a ton of stuff in the partners meetings. It's really good information. All the partners share everything that they have going on. And we have a new indicator that we're going to introduce tomorrow night that is actually going to simplify a lot of things for our partners. You'll be able to turn a whole bunch of things, just turn them on and off. You know, just a simple yes or no or true or false question to turn things on and off. I'm going to introduce that, show how to use it in the partners meeting, and go over the stuff that we've been doing on the Russell here. Okay, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it would be great for all the partners to be in there. And if you're in here on a trial and you want to be in the partners meeting, you should have gotten an email from me with what you need to do to become a partner to get in there. And if you are on the trial and you did not get an email from me, you can either email me at support@cfrn.net, or you can check your, I would check your junk or spam folders because sometimes they go right in there. But either way, you can email me at support@cfrn.net. Okay? And I will get you the information you need. All right. That said, let's get on to the markets. On the ES, I didn't take any trades on the ES today because I was focused on the Russell mostly this morning, but what I wanted to show was this. This morning when the market started to fall apart, all right, what time was this? This was 9:46. We had a pierce of a red envelope right here with a green trend strength line suggesting the market was going to move down. Now, it had done it over here as well, basically the same place over here. It did it at 14:06 over here suggesting it was going to move down to 14:01 to 1400. And then it did it again right here at 14:05, suggesting it's going to move down to 13.99 to 1400. All right, that happens to be right where our weekly trading zone is below us. Finally, it did it one more time over here. Another heads up, saying look for the short trades. Right here, it did it at 14:04, saying it's going to get down to probably 13.98, 13.97. Okay, and you can see. It got all the way down here to 1390.9275. The opportunity to enter on this move down after the bearish cross, we had to pull back up to the BBC right here. Right here where I drew this arrow in was an opportunity to enter that. It's pulled back up to the BBC right here. The cycle is overbought right now. So it's in a good spot to short if it came together and gave you the opportunity, but it looks like it's trying to work its way back up here to 1399, 1400 zone. Okay, that's what we had this morning on the ES. There were some four tick range trades that set up on the ES. I did not get into any of them. There was one right here that was pointed out by one of our partners this morning who wrote it out and took the profit on that one. I think there was another one, 920. Was this one right in here? I think there was another one right in here. That I don't know if that actually stopped out. 1405.75, and it went up to 1407.75. So depending where you got in on that, you may have stopped out on that, or you may have taken 2 points profit. But I did not trade any of those. Now, let's go over here to the YM. I took two trades on the YM this morning. This was the first one. It pulled up here to the BBC. I shorted it there at the BBC. It gave me 7 ticks profit. I wasn't watching the trade, or I would have moved my stop to break even. It turned around, and it stopped me out here for minus 11 ticks. Okay, but it did give me 7 ticks profit first. It went down toward the MA1. It didn't actually close the whole window of opportunity, but it closed most of it. Then we had a bullish cross, and I went long here on the pullback to the BBC, and that gave me 10 ticks profit. That's what ended with a net of minus 1 tick. Okay. All right. Then the thing turned around, and it dropped down here. We didn't have any opportunity here. Okay, we didn't have any opportunity right here. It pulled back up, and when this was happening, I mean, in this big move down, we didn't have any opportunity. This was the first pullback to the BBC. Once it pulled back to the BBC, I had said I want to see a down close before I get short, and then I went on to trade in the Russell again, and I missed it, but right here was the down close. And that would have, if we had shorted there at the down close, we'll say 13,100, okay? It dropped down to 13,130.90 with a 10 tick profit. All right. It gave a bullish cross with a pullback to the BBC. I wasn't even looking at it at the time. It was 11.24. We didn't try to go long. Then it crossed again bearish right here. And on this pullback, it was, you know, it never gave a pullback. The only pullback just happened right in here. All right. And it seems to be chopping around right here a little bit. I think it's trying to get up to the ES is trying to get up to the weekly trading zone here, and if that happens, it should push this up. All right. Those were the YM trades. Let me bring over the NQ. Okay, the NQ had a pretty good, an opportunity, I'll say. Okay, let's just go with that. Using the double divergence, I had drawn in some this morning, some of the opportunities. This was at the open. It was a chance to short right here. Let's see. Right over here, we had double bullish divergence for a chance to go long right in there. Okay. Let's see. I'm just looking down at the bottom for the places where we had the double divergence. Okay, right here we had the double divergence for the chance to go long right there. Over here, we had bullish divergence, but we were below the BBC, so we would have been waiting for some bearish divergence, which happened right over here. Chance to go short right there. We had some bullish divergence right here, but it was flatlined. Okay. Let's see. Scrolling over here. Right here. Okay, right here was a short opportunity. Over here, we had some bearish divergence and the close down right there. All right, for more shorting opportunity. Over here, we had mixed divergence, so nothing in there. Over here, we had bullish divergence, but the MA1 was below the BBC. Again, so nothing there. Over here, we have bullish divergence right now with a cross up and a close up above, so we should move up from right here, okay? This is the NQ 4-tick range, right? It should go up from right there. Now, let's move that off to the side, and I'll bring over the 6E. Hang on, just a second. Now, for some reason, I can't get my 6E. Here it is. All right. The 6E this morning, I wasn't really watching the 6E because I was focused mainly on the Russell trade and the Russell this morning. Again, let's get in here on the 6E. Right here, the green was leading the white on the way down, so you weren't expecting the BBC to hold. It didn't hold right here, but then once it did hold, every time you had bearish divergence, like right in here and right in here, the close down below the MA1 was an opportunity to enter. See, the bearish divergence is right here. When I say bearish divergence, I mean just on this indicator right here. Just this one. Right there. All right. Divergence between these lines and that line. And it's bearish because the cycle is in the oversold area. All right. So you could have entered right here or right here in those instances. Right here, the white was leading the green on the way up. So that says the BBC should hold. And we had some bullish divergence with it. So that suggested it should, you know, you should get a pretty good move up off the BBC right there. Okay, right here we have some bearish divergence again. The white was not leading the green when it broke right here, suggesting that the BBC will not hold. Let's see, over here, when it broke the elbow, the white was leading the green when the elbow was broken right here. Now, when I say the elbow is broken, what I mean is this. I know I'm talking really fast, but that's because I want to get my greed in here. you guys can watch this on the recap later. Okay. What I mean is when price knocks the elbow to the upside, meaning the dotted lines start printing right here, at the time that it does that, if the white is leading the green, the white line down here is leading the green, then the BBC should hold on the first pullback. Right here is the first pullback. Okay, the BBC held and pushed it up. 33.05 up to 33.15. 10 ticks so far. Okay? That was the 6E. Let's see, I've done the YM, the NQ, the 6E, and the ES. Now I'll do the Russell. Okay? We took a lot of Russell trades this morning. We started off, we had a rough start right at the beginning. I think I marked them on this chart, right? Yeah, right here at the beginning, I had three losing trades to start the morning. All right? And then I sort of switched gears. We had this one here that I didn't take. This one over here was a long trade. I don't know if I took that one. I don't think I did. I did take this short right here. It got 10 ticks back on that one. There was a trade here that I didn't take, a trade here that I did take. I didn't mark this up. I think I stopped marking this chart at this point. But with this chart right here with the Russell, we had a bunch of people. Well, we had a fair amount of folks in the live trading room this morning who were there, who were on trial. Okay, and so I really wanted to focus on the Russell, as we said we were going to try to do that this week. With that said, the setup is when price closes below the MA1 and the green line is also below the MA1. And this purple one right here is rolled down. And the black right here is rolled down. Now, this cross right here gives you a heads up to let you know that it's coming or it's likely to come. The close below the MA1 is an opportunity right there. Okay, so that's how you could have gotten into that trade, and actually this one right here on the long side. You see everything was going up right here, and right there, and right there. And you even had the little heads-up cross right there. All right. Opportunity down, back up, back down, back up, back down, back up. Over here on the short side again, on the way down. Right there. Right there. And there was the heads up. And right there. Okay. This one here on the long side didn't go anywhere. You would have stopped out on that one. Alright. It gave you an opportunity to get it right back here on the downside. Then again on the long side. A little bit. Right here on the downside, more on the long side, and you know, right now we're into live market right now. This was all during the break here right at the end. But let's go here, because I did take a bunch of trades off of this chart. All right. Let's see, after starting out, I took a long trade here. I got short. I mean, I got out of it right there. I ended up taking, I didn't take the full 10 ticks profit on that, but you can see we had the double divergence with the cross up right there. Now, the difference between this chart here and this chart here, on this chart, the green line, which is our BBC, is slower than the green line on this chart. The green line on this chart over here is not the BBC. Okay? And the MA1 on this chart is faster than the MA1 on this chart. This is our standard MA1, and I sped it up on this chart. Okay? That gives us earlier entries in the trades with the double divergence and the cross-up. Basically, what I was looking for here was the cross from either oversold or overbought areas with a cross or a close on the other side of the MA1 is what I was looking for primarily. If you had double divergence, that added, you know, like more confirmation to the trade. All right, so here we went long, took a little bit of profit. Here we went... What did we do? We went long here, but we got in a little bit late. We went long here, and we took a small loss. I think we took 5 ticks loss on that one. There was a shorting opportunity in here. I don't remember if we took it or not, but you see we had a double divergence, the cross down, and sorry, I should be pointing right there. The close down below the MA1. We went what did we do here? We had the cross-up, so we went long in here. And the arrows are right on top of each other all over the place right here, because I think I did it twice. We went long, and... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I shorted the BBC. Is that right? I can't see it. Nope, that's not the one where I shorted the BBC. Anyway, we went long, and then we went long again, it looks like. Over here, I shorted in here, and I took a little bit of profit. I shorted here and got break-even on this one, and then it dropped down. I remember that one was frustrating because it was going back and forth a lot. I think I got break-even or plus one tick on that. Over here, we had some bullish divergence, the cross up. So the place to enter this trade would have been right in here. I don't remember if I entered it. I don't think I did. Right here, the place to go long was right there, up to the BBC. Then once it hit the BBC and we had double divergence on the short side with the cross down, that was a good opportunity to short, and I did. This was at the end of the morning show. Okay, I remember I took 10 ticks off of this. I pointed this one out and this one to the guys that were in the room at that time. Charles was in there, and Dan, I believe, were asking about this one. But and that was pretty much the morning on the Russell. Okay, so we ended the morning up on the Russell, down one tick on the YM, and that's it. All right, so I'm going to wrap it up right here because I want to bring my greed in. If anybody has any questions about anything, I don't even have my question box up. Hold on a minute. Phil, I will send you an email. Okay, you need to be a partner to get in there. Okay, I think I already did send you an email, but you need to be a partner to get into the partners meeting. All right, and that's always the case. Once you're a partner, you'll appreciate that. All right. That said, I'm going to stop the recording right here. If anybody has any questions, feel free to type them in, or you can email me at support@cfrn.net. All right, that will go to Dwayne and myself, so one of us will get your response. All right, the recording is off, and Mike Reed, you're back on.
Hello, Mike. Still there?
All right. There. Well, we have lots of movement. We have to say that much. Where's the NQ right now? Okay, it didn't really move too much. Yeah, since I pointed out that it should start to go up. All right. So, hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hi, Michael. Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm trading actively this morning.
Yeah.
I think I probably placed more trades today than I have all week.
Okay. Well, let me give a recap. For the week, we had our high zone was at 1318.75 to 1420. And I think the high was 1419 something, but in that zone overnight. And then coming into today, we had 1412.50 to 1413. I think overnight high was around 1412.5 or just below that. Then after the open, we had 1408.50 to 1409 zone for initial resistance. After the open, they reached 1408.75 right in that zone, and that set up a nice short. After stocks opened, they fell to our major support for today, 1393.25 to 1392.5. So far, I think our low is lows in that area. 1392.75, so just above 1392.5. And that should be a major area. There could be one last washout down to 1389.88 area. But, things have changed, you know, over the last couple of days. Coming into the week, we were looking for a rally coming off an oversold condition. And that big gap up got filled today. Let's see. The for a long time, little borrowers sold oscillators. My stuff wasn't. They weren't given any signals at all because internals were basically going nowhere, basically lower than. They were basically weakening against price action, and so they didn't give any signals. But lately here, we have had some buy signals and sell signals, and we had some sell signals coming into yesterday, and should be getting about oversold. I don't know. We'll see after how today goes, but I like it that the fact that finally oscillators are in gear, and also coinciding at support and resistance areas. So that sets up some good opportunities for us.
Yeah, that's I like to look for that too, where everything sort of comes together at one place.
Right.
That seems to be good.
Yeah, especially the slightly bigger picture for me. Two to three days or more, 2 to 5 days, and that's those indicators are back working again. So I like that. Bigger picture stuff agrees with the short term stuff, and also at good areas. So that sets up to good, really good opportunities for us.
I just like the movement. It's it's been a frustrating few months so far this year.
Right.
Movement, you know, the majority of the movement coming when I'm sleeping.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Same here. But right. It's good to see the charts. Yeah, there's some range on my charts now and lots of back and forth. And that's what we need. Yesterday it was like, we had basically consolidation day, but it was not acting well at the end of the day, and we caught a move off the 1411 area. I'm sorry. Just under 1411 was our short, and they got to 1410 before coming apart at the end of the day. I think they dropped another 4 points to 1406, but kind of a precursor of further downside. Action was seemed to have changed. They kept rejecting, I believe, 1413 area yesterday, and that was a resistance that we had, 1412.5, 1413, which begins in play today. But that was rejected several times before the final push lower there at the end of the day. So, I don't know what, right now I haven't checked, the numbers below today's low or 1388. Do you have anything?
Yeah, we have. Let's see.
90.91.
Our next one down, we have 1390 by 91, and below that,
okay,
we have 1381 by 82, is what we have, and we have something below that too.
Wow. Okay.
Let me just flip this here, and I'll be able to see.
I thought you guys
there.
Were just ignoring me. I had my mic on mute.
No, I was wondering where you were.
90.91. So, yeah, there we go.
90.91 is the next one down. Below 81.82, we have stuff all the way down. We have as far down as 58.59, I believe, right?
Okay, well. Well, I don't, who knows?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, we've got to get to the next one first. And,
right. I got to go down to 92.5, but, or you're 90.91.
Yes.
But, this bouncing unit's failed, and right at prior support at 1398, 97.5, bounce high. So, old resistance, now new support. Now it just supports new resistance here.
Yeah, the old support is the new resistance. Well, It seems to be coming that way. I mean, and it's also, for us anyway, it's right here at the 1400 level. So that's, you know, I think that's got a little bit of psychological significance to it.
Right.
Anyway, if nothing else. But for us, it is right there at the 1400 level.
What's your next level down, Mike?
Pardon me?
What's your next level down?
Below 92.5. I have, there's one number at 1389.5, and then 1388, so kind of a 1.5-point zone. Below that, then I really didn't check for today, but I think probably around your area down around 82 is probably, would probably be next. Yeah, I don't think they're going to get out of trouble unless they can get back over that 1398 for me and then hold that on a pullback. Basically, kind of a trend down day so far. Just a few small bounces that haven't been able to stick.
What was the news that took this thing down so quickly during the last hour?
I didn't hear any news. So, I don't know. I think it was probably technical selling, once the 1402.5 area was broken, 1403 area was broken, it seemed to accelerate. So, that's what I'm going to say it was, Dwayne. I don't know, it had to be new. They'll come up with some reason, but.
Yeah, right. They always do.
Yeah, that's well, what it's the news know, business.
I talked last night on the blog, and I talked yesterday on the show about the BATS exchange that attempted to IPO on Friday,
yeah.
And that got pulled.
What a fiasco.
That got pulled because they crashed their own stock. First they crashed Apple, then they crashed their own stock.
Yes.
And we talked about this yesterday. They accounted, in last year, in 2011, they accounted for 10% of all U.S. stock trades. Only 10%. And they were processing an average of 29,000 trades per second.
Wow.
Now, I mean, when you think about that number, 29,000 trades per second, we all know there's 60 seconds in a minute and 60 minutes in an hour and however many hours in a trading day. Are there any? Are we the only three guys still actually trading?
Yeah, it used to be that about 60% of the volume was due to programs, buy and sell programs type of deal. Arbitrage. I don't know what they do with the high frequency trading, how they figure that now, but I'm sure the percentage of volume's gone up. That's not actual investment decisions, you know.
Yeah, that's 12.9 million trades in an hour, right? And that's trades. Not necessarily just contracts, is it?
That's trades, that's in and out. Or I don't know. Wouldn't that be a complete trade? I would say.
Yeah, I would think it's, you know, if it's equities anyway that they're doing, then you know, I don't think it's 12.9 million shares. I think it's
trades, right?
Actual trades. So that's a significant.
No, it says 29,000 trades per second.
Yep.
Yeah. And that would be buying or buying and selling or vice versa, right? Like, to complete the trade, you got to have a buy and a sell. Is that the way you look at it, or you just have any orders placed?
You know, even if you cut the number in half and say, well, that's 29,000 round trips, they're really only doing, you know, 15,000 per second. That's my whole point. I mean, there's a whole lot of pinging and ponging going back and forth between these machines. And, you know, there was talk of this, when I first started trading, years ago that the machines, you know, would eventually become so efficient that we would lose the markets because there would no longer be the bid, the ask, the supply, demand. It would become so efficient that it would just hum along. And so, I hate to think that we are approaching that, or that could even become a reality. But maybe it is, maybe it can. And it's not going away. I mean, they're not going to stop if these guys with these computers, with these trading programs. They're building exchanges to cater to the high frequency traders. Okay, so they're not going to go away. Yeah, maybe they have a false start. Maybe they crash Apple. Maybe they have to cancel their IPO. But there's a lot of money behind them, and BATS is just the largest of the independent exchanges. There are other ones out there. What's interesting is that when you think of an independent exchange having the ability to actually flash crash the largest company on the planet, Apple. Somehow it doesn't seem like that should be able to happen, but it did. Now, interestingly, the NASDAQ just waltzed right in and said, no problem. They just cancel them. They just canceled them. So, anyway, as long as the market continues to move, we'll continue to trade it. And all anyone had to do was be short this morning, you know, off the bell, and you did well, right?
Yep, pretty much. 10 minutes in is perfect, but...
So I guess the new technical analysis will be figuring out which side the machines are going to take today, and just go with that. So what else is going on, Mike? Anything?
Let's see. I haven't set a date yet, but I got over the weekend. I planned a date for a camp. I don't even know if I had one last spring, but it's been quite a while. I think I may have a year ago, but that would probably come up next month, so I'll let you know if I have it when I have a date. Other than that, just getting around a little better. It's just nice.
All right, well, let's get
into it. Kids baseball, too, so.
Yeah, you do have going. A camp coming up. Well, let us know when you establish a date for that so that we can let everybody know. And hang tight for a minute. I'll bring David on so that he can say hello to you, all right?
Okay, sure. Great. I got to hop just before
we're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, both Michaels.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, David. Good morning. I have a lot of Michaels and Mikes in my life.
Yes, you do.
So, me too. So, Mike Reed, how are you today?
No, I'm Michael R.
Michael R.
Come on now.
All right. Yeah, everybody's doing the last name thing. You know, we got Michael X, we got Michael B, now we have Michael R.
I think you guys might have a Michael R. already over there, so maybe I need to change. I'm both fine. Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm just watching today's market, and I'm happy to see the volatility, you know, some volatility come back into the market. Nice to see. And let's see, we have a few days left in the month of March, just a couple of trading days left. So, you know, it's going to be important, as always, how the market closes in the month of March here.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the start of spring. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. This is a nice little runoff.
So, David, you take the equinoxes into account? I know I used to follow them pretty closely.
It is part of what I do, because I believe that every natural cycle that is there, natural meaning that it's not man-made, the equinox is an astrological thing. You know, our planet is in a certain position and a certain angle and a certain tilt, which makes the four seasons. So being a natural cycle, yes, I definitely do. I also take into account human cycles as well, which are cycles that everyone agrees upon. As an example, 5 days a week for trading, or 7 days a week for a full week, 4 weeks in a month based on our Julian calendar, 12 months in a year. Since everyone has agreed upon that, that makes it a force unto itself. It doesn't, it's not arbitrary in the sense that everybody agrees on it. It may have been arbitrary to come up with it in the first place. That could be argued, but the fact that it is agreed upon by everybody makes it a natural force now that everyone agrees on it. So we all agree that, you know, Friday is going to come up, and then we have Saturday and Sunday off, and then the next trading week begins. Everyone agrees that 4 weeks plus or minus a day or so, or a week sometimes, equals a full month. And so in that agreement, there's a force at work. So I like the natural cycles that man has nothing to do with, which are like the equinoxes, like you said. And what Mike's asking about, you like to be called Mike, not Michael, right?
Mike's fine, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's the thing with Dave and David and Mike and Michael and Steve and Stefan, you know.
It's Michael.
Nice to ask people. It's always nice to say, well, how do you like to be called? Because some people, that different name sometimes means a lot to them. Like me, as an example. I like David, but I'm not crazy about Dave. When I hear Dave, I see a guy with a baseball hat.
Hold on. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know what, some vision comes into my head, and I know it's completely mechanical, but anyway, it's people like, you know, their name pronounced properly, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, the natural
cycle. I grew up with a baseball cap on my head now.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a baseball cap on your head.
Of course not.
If your name is Dave, it doesn't fit in with me. Anyway, what I was going to say is that the natural cycles, what Mike had asked about, the equinoxes, these are basically the four quarters of the year, and they're very well established in the mindset of people, and so they're a force unto themselves. And so I do pay attention to that, and it is important in my trading, and I think people should watch those and consider those. I think a lot of people are. We're always looking for and looking at things that may have an effect on the market. And it can get pretty spooky. Obviously, people can say all kinds of things. You know, well, the Palladian galaxy is doing such and such, and that means the markets are going to do this. I'm not at that point, but I am pretty freaky. Anyway, but I do like to think about things that might affect the market in some way and play with the ideas, et cetera. And sometimes when you play with those ideas, you come up with something that is that could be very valuable. Even if it's just a little thing that helps confirm some other idea. There's a lot of value, I think, in just having little confirmations for things. You know, you have a basic idea, and then if you can get other little confirmations, you don't need too many of them, but a few, it's very helpful. It can be very good for your confidence in being in a trade. And in the end, that's how you make a trade, is you have to be confident enough to put your trade on and be in the market. What about you? Are you focusing on those at all, or how do you feel about them?
I used to watch them very closely.
Do you wear a baseball cap while you're doing that, or do you have your baseball hat on? Or
backwards. No, not in the house, but Okay. Not in the house. No hats in the house.
Oh, that's right. Your wife has already made that rule clear.
Well, I kind of made that a rule from my dad's kind of day. But outside, you got a ball and a glove and a ball cap on, and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Get the neighborhood together, and we got us a ball game.
That's right. That is unless your neighborhood has an HOA, and that means, you know, there's rules that you can't play baseball on the streets.
Yeah, well, not when I was a kid.
I know. We could do anything back then. There was no such thing as an HOA back then.
12 kids in the neighborhood, so we could almost always get a ball game up.
But, yeah.
Anyways.
So yeah, I do watch that, and I'm glad to hear that you do as well. Yeah. And these are all just broad-based indications to, you know, then focus down to something that may be important. You know, I do look at it.
Okay, great.
I also watch for Get Smart reruns, and I figure that anytime there's a Get Smart rerun on TV, I think we're close to a change in trend in the market. So that's one of the connections I've made. It's very profound. I may be writing a book about it. But it'll be more valuable than a random walk down Wall Street. Well, go ahead.
Oh, my. Is that guy going to come on, Ryan?
He is.
No, I'm just playing with it, Jane. I don't want him to think I'm going to be mean to him.
And is there going to be a chance you get him on, Dwayne?
Well, yeah, if I ever email him. Why don't I do it right now while we're chatting?
That's right.
Okay. Well, then I won't get off.
Yeah, I have to leave within 5 minutes, but go ahead and email him, Dwayne.
Pull him up here.
Well, that's right. Anyway, so...
You know, I went through that with a professor in college, a finance professor.
Were you thinking this way back then?
We had to, I was into technical stuff, and he was anti-technical analysis. We had to read the book, Random Walk Down Wall Street, as part of our, class.
Yeah, it's been around a long time. That's funny, so you had a leaning even back then towards, the idea that there was something there, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Next, we, actually got the professor interested in it after a lot of prodding, but it was quite interesting. We ended up I went back as an adult, young adult, and they just started with the new packages. I had a thing called Investors Alliance, I believe, an old end-of-day software program where it had some technical studies in it. We kind of got him flipped around to where we were making stocks based on technicals rather than just fundamentals, book value, all that kind of stuff that, you know, you go through for a fundamental outlook, and you're going through each company's balance sheets and all that type of stuff. That's how we were supposed to do it. And, let's try it, technicals versus fundamentals. And so it was pretty cool.
Well, those professors.
You don't often change a professor's mind. I don't know what he did when I left. He probably went back to the random walk. But
well, that's all right. There really is something very powerful, and this goes with anything in life. There's a vast difference between knowing a subject, reading about something, learning about it in some maybe light experimental way, and actually being out there doing the thing. And the people that are, you know, academicians, they're very often very bright and very intelligent. But what I have found, because my stepfather was in academia and I grew up around that, is that there's a separate layer that is completely missed by academia. And that layer comes only to people that are actually deeply involved in the doing of the thing, digging and doing. And somehow academia, they can come up with great things, perhaps, but they won't see that layer. They just will not see that layer. And so I found that to be true in many, many different areas. The markets are one where you can dig in there and you can find things that the academicians, whatever the right word is, would never
have thought of, and they may have thought about all kinds of things and written whole books, but because they weren't in there with the shovels doing work, they didn't see it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There was an article back, way back, I found an article in the library about, let's see, I can't remember the title, but it was debunking the random walk in a way. They actually did come up with a way to beat the market over time. And I can't remember what their method was, but it was in the Journal of Finance, which is his Bible, basically, you know, for a PhD in finance. So
yeah,
he kind of wanted to, like, debunk the article, but then eventually he did come around. So anyhow,
well, you know, it's really, we don't want to spend our lives arguing with people over, you know, because everybody has a position and they think they're right and we think we're right and on and on. The thing is can you find a high probability trade? That's the really important thing. And then later you can bring your trading statement to the random guy and say, I guess I'm just one of those outliers, you know, one of those statistical anomalies that, you know, has been able to, you know, dodge the random bullet or whatever. I don't know how you would say it. And he would agree with you. He would say, yes, that's correct. You know, none of this happened.
He knew
because
I was,
technicals worked. Yeah. This happened because you're statistically an anomaly.
He knew I was going to be trouble when they were talking different theorems about interest rates. And they're talking about yields on a, yields farther out are always higher than yields, shorter-term yields. And I asked him, what about inverted yield curve? He's like, oh, Mike, these are a bunch of freshmen in sophomores, or I don't remember what it was. I said, don't confuse them any further.
Oh.
So,
well, you were lucky to have a finance class, I guess. But because I grew up around that, I just couldn't stomach going to college. I just, for some reason, I said this before, I could go now and get a lot of value out of it because I have a purpose. But I didn't have a purpose for college, and I didn't see, you know, it seemed like it was almost interrupting my education. Either way, it, you know, it worked out the way it did for me. So, well, anyway, if you are on your way, it's nice to talk with you, Mike. I'm glad you're doing well, and hope to have you back on the show soon, and we'll chit-chat over markets, and you're starting to move a little bit now. So,
Okay, guys. Have a good afternoon,
Mike,
Dwayne.
Thanks so much for everything, buddy. Good to hear from you, as always.
Okay. I'll be back.
All right.
All right, see you, Mike.
See you guys. Take care. Thanks for having me, Dwayne.
Thank you, Mike. It was good talking to you the other day. Let's do that again soon.
Okay, let's do it. Okay. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. Well, there you are.
All right, David.
Well, Dwayne, anything interesting in the news today?
Spotlight shines on you.
All right.
You know, not that I'm aware of.
I
haven't seen any big fancy headlines come by. I really am more... My mind really is kind of taken by this whole... We started talking about this on Friday, and then I wrote about it on the blog, and I've researched it a little bit more. And I talked about it, I think, yesterday before you came on to the radio program. But you were probably hanging in the back there listening about this whole... We talked about it Friday, the BATS, Independent Exchange.
Yes.
That in 2011 processed 10% of all stock transactions in the United States. Now that right there, that's a lot, because I'm thinking before Friday, a lot of people never even heard of BATS, right? Had you heard of BATS before last Friday?
Yes, I had.
Okay, well, you're in the business, so it's kind of a given that maybe you would have heard of it. But
I wouldn't say that I knew much more about it other than it being an exchange, so...
Okay. And... I'm curious, and I don't know the answer to this. Let's say you have an equity account with I don't know, Ameritrade or Charles Schwab or whoever it might be. Mm-hmm. And you woke up on Friday morning and said, you know, I think I'm going to buy me some of that Apple stock.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know or have any way of controlling if that order, how it gets routed? Does it get routed? I mean, the orders that get routed through BATS, is that because people have specifically said, I want my orders routed through there? Or
no,
do they just
I don't
get
know
divvied
that that's
up
the case.
Or is it just like a scattershot and wherever there's a, like if you're trying to buy, wherever there's a seller, the order gets electronically routed to that destination?
Right.
Do you have any, do you know? Because I don't, I'm saying I don't know.
My belief, yeah, I don't. My belief is that it would go to, they're the ones who direct you. You give the instruction of what you want to do and they manage it on that other side.
Now,
the exchange side manages it.
You, okay, in the world of equity trading, you're kind of a big shot guy, all right? Let's not pull any punches here, okay?
Oh, well, here we go.
Everyone knows I'm not a neurologist, and most everyone knows you kind of are a big shot in the world of equities trading. So with that said, let's get that out of the way, all right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's cleared out now. We've really made that clear.
These guys, they're only handling 10% of the entire volume in the U.S. stock market, but they're handling 29,000 trades per second.
Yeah.
Now, I know a couple people that trade equities. I know one high-profile guy out in Vegas that trades equities. And I know a couple people that got a 401k, you know, and a retirement fund. And I know a couple people that dabble in some mutual funds. But where are these 29,000 trades per second? Where do they come from?
Well, is that 29,000 trades per second every second of the trading day? Or is it a period of time that it was a...
Well, let me give you the official statement. Last year, BATS accounted for 10% of all U.S. stock trades, processing an average of 29,000 trades per second.
Well, I think in our worlds where we are in our own homes and we read the internet or the newspaper and watch TV, we have shrunk down to the point where we have forgotten how many people are in the world, how many people all over the world. The world has, you know, nearly 7 billion people. How many people all over the world trade the U.S. stock market, buying and selling various, you know, equities? I don't know if is considered a share of stock or if it's a whole block of them or how they break that down, but it wouldn't matter to me, honestly. I know what you're saying. It's a very incredible number. When you really sit down to think about 29,000 of anything happening within a second, but, that just goes to show us maybe that there's an awful lot of people trading in the U.S. stock market. That's why it's always in the news. That's why it's always on every news program every single day. It's a very, very powerful force.
You brought up a figure. There's 7 billion people in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go out on a limb, okay, as I'm known to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to suggest that 6 billion of those people do not have a U.S. equities account. Do you think that would be fair?
I don't know. I guess, maybe.
Because I'm thinking
so there's a billion people playing. That actually may be true.
Because, I mean, like most of the people working at Foxconn in China, I don't think they have a TD Ameritrade or a Charles Schwab account. I don't think.
No, I don't either. But there's also millions and millions and you know, lots of other people who, you know, have other kinds of lives than those people.
Yeah, there's Martha Stewart who call up their broker and say, buy me 100,000 shares of XYZ stock or 10,000 shares or 20,000 shares. That's one trade.
Well, that's what I want to know.
That's not 100,000.
Is that one trade?
Yeah, that's one trade.
Are you sure they're counting it that way? Because each one of those shares is traded. There's 100,000 shares each one of them is being traded. You could make the argument that there's 100,000 trades.
You could, and one of our really smart guys in the chat room right now is Googling his fingers off, trying to determine exactly
what the definition of a trade is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Per bats, per this 29,000 trades per second figure, let us know if it's per share, if it's round trip, if it's each side, how that works. I think however you break it down, it's still a lot. I just don't think it's
that's why I said earlier, it almost doesn't matter.
Per share. So, I don't know.
But is your consternation over it that it's hard to fathom that many people being involved in the markets and trading in equities and that only representing 10%?
Yes, that is exactly my point. Very concisely spoken.
Yeah.
You could be on radio.
I could be. I do on TV. I think it's just bigger than we all realize. I just think the whole thing is much larger than anybody realizes. There's many factors at work, and I think, you know, just as China trades heavily in our bonds and Japan trades heavily in our bonds, the stock market is nothing compared to the currency. Currencies are 10 times, if not more, than the stock market. The currency trading is the largest, deepest liquid pool of trading in 24 hours over everything. The bond market is probably second only to the currencies. So even though the stock market is really big, it doesn't stand a candle towards, I would believe, towards currency trading. I think the number in currency trading, if they did that per second, or however they broke that down, I think that number in currency trading would dwarf that 29,000. Just make it look like a funny little number.
Okay.
Because the volume is so much greater. Not the volume, but I mean, yeah, the volume. Just the number of trades, people that are trading in currencies. You know, you can say, well, is everybody, you know, running around the world trading currencies? No, but there's a huge volume of banks that do trade currencies 24 hours, and then the whole commensurate, you know, tree of people under them that are trading currencies. So it's just that, you know what, it really boils down to, and I'm really glad you bring the point up, it shows how easy it is to think of the market sort of, you shrink it down to your own level, in a sense, and finally these numbers, if you're like you did, you sit down, you really think about the numbers, and you think, God, that's an average of 29,000 anythings a second. Is just, you know, a really huge, ridiculously large number. And it just goes to show the market really is, like I always say, it's really big and important.
Man does not think about sex that many times per second. I mean, it's a really high number.
No, but I think it's a close second.
Yeah, it's a really high number, I know. I've seen it quoted. But it's not that much, no.
Yeah.
And what's really concerning people is the fact, and I already talked about this, and now I won't go all conspiracy theory on it, but investors are, you know, becoming a little suspicious because whenever the fat finger or false print trades happen, they do so on the downside and, you know, ultimately benefit the hedge funds who are running the computer-driven algorithms through the high-frequency trading platforms like BATS. Now, NASDAQ did do the right thing on Friday, and they just stepped in and just scratched them. They busted the trade, right? Is that the term?
That's correct.
They busted the trade. Now, yesterday, there was some weird trade that went off at like $580 on Apple. They didn't bust that one. They did not, and I don't know all the background or history on that. Maybe they didn't bust that one because it didn't go in favor.
Right.
of the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds or whoever.
Well, with the volume, to counter a little bit of the idea of the, you know, yes, it may benefit the hedge funds, but what do you think the odds are that something this complex and this many transactions going off without an occasional hitch are? I mean, you would have to say at some point with this 29,000 transactions going off a second, there really is a possibility that something's going to go wrong. And so I don't know that I would have to jump quite to the conspiracy level. It may just be the fact is that I don't think it's a very high probability that you could run a system that intensely that wouldn't have an occasional error. And really, for all things that we look at, the errors are kind of few and far between, at least as I see them. I don't see a lot of them. You know, once in a while, in the last 10 years, I can think of errors that caused really big moves in the market. That's over a long period of time. Maybe, you know, I could imagine that happening in a system this complicated. What do you think of them there, apples?
I don't know.
All right. Can't be perfect all the time, right? I mean,
well,
someone's going to make a mistake. Someone's going to key something in wrong. How often does it happen, you know, in other key punch entry jobs? Somebody's going to get it wrong at some point.
Yeah, they actually did a study on what a typical true fat finger trade looks like. And how, like, if you look at a keyboard or a terminal, mm-hmm. how the numbers are placed together. And it's like if when somebody sends you a text message and it looks mm-hmm. like gibberish, but mm-hmm. if you look to the left on the keyboard, like, okay, they were like one keystroke off to the left on.
Yeah.
You can kind of figure it out. Short of a dose of LSD. There was no
yeah, somebody
way,
had to do a big was, jump to get the other numbers
there
in there.
There was no way that thing got fat-fingered. It's just that the computer program got carried away. And mm-hmm. That's what they're blaming it on. They're blaming it on a bad... They went from fat finger to bad print. So, anyway, I'm just curious how... I mean... Obviously, yeah. We're still trading in the markets today, and I don't know if you had any trades yet or not. We haven't talked about that.
We did.
But anybody that, you know, was short near the open or shortly thereafter the open and held on to their position, despite mm-hmm. all the bats and bots and HFTs mm-hmm. and all that stuff, fat fingers, bad prints, uh-huh. you had a chance to be short from, I don't know, 1406. The same spot we suggested getting along this move up, 1406, you could have been short from there all the way down to 1393. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. There's still money there. I think
there is.
I think
and, you know, Dwayne, if you missed it, if it's not something that fit into your deal, and you, meaning anybody, you know, there'll be another setup here. And we'll... You know, yeah, it's a nice move down. I'm very happy to see this. This actually increases volatility nicely, which will set up nice trades for either later today and into tomorrow.
I guess my real question is, are you at all concerned that this this recent activity that we've seen with these very compressed ranges, you know, mm-hmm. for the majority of the session, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden you get a pop or a drop where mm-hmm. the market moves, you know, like double
sure.
or triple the daily range in one right. hourly candle.
Right.
And then goes back into the range. Mm-hmm. I mean, today looks pretty nice. I mean, it's all downside, but it's like it's a nice big move to the downside. Mm-hmm. One, two, three,
I don't know.
Four,
I've seen
four.
So much of this over the years where the market is in these phases where mm-hmm. it does what we've seen recently. It's in a very tightly compressed uptrend in a larger picture, and inside that picture, they're very compressed as well. I've also seen years of very volatile motion where the market is just banging back and forth for years. I mean, you know, I say this truthfully, I've only been doing this for about 22 or 23 years. That's not, you know, the markets have been around for a long time. But in that time, I've seen a lot of this and other behavior. So I know what you're saying.
So the term for that is what, whippersnapper?
A whippersnapper. That's for people... from
years.
Your parts of the country.
That's hardly nothing. So, in other words, you are not overly concerned that these machines are going to make the market so efficient that we might have to learn how to fish or...
You know, yeah, I know. You won't have trouble learning how to fish, but I will. I'll tell you that. You know, where were you born, Dwayne? You were out in the South, so...
Georgia.
Yeah.
South Georgia. But I'll admit,
I'm
not a gray fisherman. You know, the worms and the crickets, they make me a little squeamish. And the whole lure
thing. I wouldn't go out there without a Papil pocket fisherman. Is that your shoe phone, Dwayne?
It is. Can you talk for a minute while I take it? Because I think it might be
important. Of course. I hope everybody remembers that. Those of you old enough to remember the Papil pocket fisherman, Ronco, the company that was marketing all that stuff, they were on a roll for a long time. The Papil pocket fisherman. Anyway, I'm not overly concerned at all about the markets becoming too efficient. As a matter of fact, the increase has been logarithmic in the number of machines trading the market, and yet the market remains quite predictable, at least from our perspective, under a given set of conditions. And all of that so-called efficiency doesn't stop the market from running to its targets. As a matter of fact, I think an argument could be made that the more of those machines there are, the better the market is. The more liquidity, the more trades are flowing at the market, the more accurately it will reflect its own true nature, meaning the nature of the thing that contains it, because that's what the market really is revealing. It certainly is revealing psychology in human beings, but that psychology in the form of buying and selling is itself inside of a larger construct, and you know, it's hard for people to understand and believe, and I don't fully, of course, don't understand it, but it's my best explanation for what I have seen, and that includes, you know, the kinds of forecasts where very specific things have to happen, and they do happen. And so, no, you know, in response to Dwayne's thing, I'm not concerned. The efficient market theory is an interesting theory that the market doesn't leave any time for you to get into it. This is one of many ways of expressing it, because it's so efficient that it's always at the number that it's supposed to be at any given time, and that it just doesn't allow you to be able to forecast where it's going to go because it is too efficient, nor trade it to get there because it so quickly completes the run from one level to another. And so Dwayne's question is, you know, do you think that the efficiency of the market is getting too great and that's why we get these big pops up, et cetera, and, we, you know, you can't trade them or it's difficult to trade them. It's difficult to trade any move. I mean, some moves are easier than others, but trading is not an easy endeavor. You have to practice and get good at it and work on your trading skills. But I guess that's my answer to it, is that I not only think that it's possible and even likely that the efficiency of the market, as it even gets greater, will make even better markets, not worse markets, because the more of the trading you have going on, the more accurately the market will reflect the underlying its underlying nature. It's like it's drawing out the line much, you know, it's, imagine looking at an old lumber chart where it's very sketchy and there's not a lot of volume. You can't see everything the market intended on doing because there's gaps in there. And then as you start filling it in, you start seeing more and more as you get more volume. You see more and more of what the market intended on doing. And that volume gives you, shows you a much more detailed, finer picture of what the market, the underlying nature of the market is. So I'm not countering you just to counter you. I think this has always been my condition, is that it's a condition, all right, that the market is, that the technical way the market is working is not capable of destroying the nature of the market. Whether that means that you've got millions of people hacking away on a computerized system, banging in and out of the market really fast, creating enormous liquidity at 29,000 trades per second, or if it's even thinner, and even thinner markets will respond to natural levels. So that would be my answer right now. So, like as an example, we have a natural level today at 1393, which is due in the, what are we in the third, fourth hour today right now? Where are we here? Let's see. One, two, three, four. So in the actually it's due in the sixth hour. So we expect it. Well, now they're hitting it right as we're talking. So I mean, they've already hit it earlier, but that would normally be tested again. You know, plus or minus 1 hour, which is in the next hour that starts in 7 minutes. So one of the things, this is why we actually have a short position on right now from earlier, holding for a retest of this level into today's sixth hour. Now, can you say that all these people trading, all these machines trading, all of this efficiency, is that hurting it from getting there, or is it actually revealing the nature of the market much more clearly by filling it in with all the volume? I could make that argument that would be the case. So that would be my argument. So the efficient market theory proposes that if markets get too efficient, no one can make money. No one can follow, get off a trade because the markets move too efficiently, like what you were saying. Are the markets efficient in that way? Yes, they are efficient. But that efficiency doesn't destroy the nature of the market. It enhances the nature of the market. It actually makes the market visible enough to trade technically. That would be an argument that I would make. I'm not sure that I'm right, but that's the argument that I would make. So, how's that sit with
you? I just got a response from Bert Melkiel. @princeton.edu. I'm traveling most of April. Try again in May. And he's okay. A man of few words.
Yeah.
So here's my response. Thanks for the prompt reply. I'll reach out again in May. However, our audience is quite anxious to hear from you.
Quite angry.
The interview can be done by phone at your convenience. Even in your car phone.
You tell them.
Remember car phones? How cool was that?
I do remember car phones. I remember thinking it was the coolest thing that if you had an antenna on your car, it meant you had a phone in there. Way, way back, you would see people picking up a phone, and you'd see the coiled cord running back from the phone to, you know, it was just like a phone off your kitchen wall that they had.
Okay, I just shot that off to him. We'll see what he says back.
What's that?
I'll see what he says. I would really think the guy would want to. Well, he doesn't know that we don't agree with him at this point.
No. He's heard. Listen, I mean, with all due respect, he's heard all of the arguments we're going to make 1,000 times.
But
we're not
going to
present.
Think,
we meaning all of us. We're not going to present anything that he hasn't heard.
Okay,
he's heard it all.
Well, he might think that we're like a bunch of his googly-eyed students sitting up in his class in the lecture hall.
Why don't you type him another message? Say we're not a bunch of your googly-eyed students
hanging on his every word, thinking he's a, you know, kind of a he knows it all, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll see how he responds back, and I'll say, by the way. You know, some of us really don't believe that Wall Street is random. And that might be just enough to pique his curiosity to go, well, of course it is. I wrote a book about it. And then I wrote a second book about it.
And then it's in its 11th printing.
Yeah, and I mean, so this guy, he really believes his position. So it may take a little bit of a challenge.
So.
You know, it may take a little bit of a challenge to say, well, you know what? We don't buy it.
Yeah, we don't buy that stuff, Mikkel. Whatever your name really is. Why wouldn't that be his real name?
That is. But it's not the real name of the guy who follows me on the internet. That's just, he took on that name, and his avatar is the little rich guy from the Monopoly board set.
Oh.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. That's the guy that Jim Carrey threw over his shoulder in his Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, in the scene.
I missed that. The little guy with the top hat?
The top hat and the glasses, yeah.
Right.
That's really funny.
That's this guy's avatar. He follows me around the internet, and his name's McKill. And in his, bio, he says that he named himself, he took on that handle because he believes in the McKill guy that wrote the book. So,
well, good. I mean, it's listen, and I just want to say this for the millionth time. We may be wrong, but we have evidence that suggests that there is something going on in the markets. We have plenty of that evidence. It may be viewed by the other side as just anomalies, or that if the sample were big enough, it wouldn't be able to be repeatable, and on and on and on. And that may be the end of the argument, because you can't, you know, you can't win the argument. At some point, you could show somebody, if they really want to, you could show them 20 winning trades or 20 winning market calls or forecasts in a row. And they could very easily say to you, well, yeah, that happens once in a while. It's random. And if you continue on doing it, then ultimately you'll come back to the mean. You know, it'll just be 50-50. It's like a coin toss, wherever the market's going to go. And that's, he uses that argument, of course, in his book, the coin toss argument, that yesterday's price levels have nothing to do where the market is today. Last hour's price levels have nothing to do. And, Duane, we know that's just a bunch of garbage. I mean, come on. You know that's a fact, right?
That what's
putting you on the line here? That you know, that's just not true. That, you know, where the market was previously has no bearing on where it is today or where it will go today or any of that stuff. I mean, your own weekly trading zones.
Oh, right, yeah.
Argue against that, do they not?
No, yeah. No.
Or are they just an anomaly, or are they just, do we just need enough statistical samples to show that you really are sitting right on the 50% mean, you just didn't know it. You just have to see enough. You know, do we have to see samples all the way to the return of Jesus? I mean, how big of a sample do we need to satisfy the guy?
Now,
that's really the crux of the thing.
No, I mean, it is a historical fact known by every CFRM partner.
It's a historical
fact that I said price will most probably, with a high degree of probability this week, consolidate in the 1408-1409 1-point range, and it did that for, roughly, give or take, 14 hours. So that's pretty much not random. Now, people are going, well, yeah, well, what about that 1419, 1420 up there? How'd you miss that? To be honest with you, I know exactly how I missed it now, but I'm not going to go back and change it and redraw the lines. It is what it is, but I do know why I missed it. And so here we are.
Right. It's all random, though. I mean, the thing is that you know, that's, you know, if I was taking his position, I would say, well, I can name a number. This is one of the things that he may present. Listen, I'm going to name a number for you, 1390. And 1390 is going to get hit sometime, you know, in the next 2 weeks, as an example. And let's say 1390 does get hit in the next 2 weeks. Then he's going to say, I can't use that to prove that the markets aren't random. That's what he's going to say. The markets just happen to hit 1390, and you happen to say that, or whatever the number is.
What if I happen to say it's going to get hit by close of business today? Would he still have the same argument?
Then you would have a better argument, but nowhere near good enough, because he would say, well, let's see you do that, and then we get to the sample issue.
Yeah.
Let's see 50 of those. And the sample issue is the final insult for anybody trying to prove something to a random walker. Because the sample just increases in size until all of us have died in a nuclear holocaust.
Because if you and I say price is going to go to 1390, that's two trades versus 29,000 a second.
Right. That's right.
That's
there
a
you
huge
go. That's
sample
a good
size. We'll never, David, we got to stay out of the locker room. We'll never measure up.
Go, Okay, listen. Text him back and say, don't bother. Because, you know, maybe we're just making a living off of randomness and we just don't know it. Maybe somebody needs to inform us that this is all random.
By the way, you can get a Ronco Pocket Fisherman on eBay for $16.99.
It's the Papil Pocket Fisherman. Please, it's the Ronco Papil Pocket Fisherman.
His name's Ron Popeil, but I'm pretty sure the product is simply called the Ronco Pocket Fisherman.
Actually, I would like to counter that with people will type in and tell you that it was called the Papil Pocket Fisherman.
All right, here we go.
It really was. I heard it for years on TV.
Pocket Fisherman.
Because it had a lot of P's in it, and I used to try to say that. If you have a little microphone, it pops really hard every time you say that. Papil Pocket Fisherman.
All right.
You know.
You ready to go to the official website?
All right. Well, we've had a fun time chit-chatting there. Let's take a look at the markets today. We've had...
No. Hang on.
Oh, the official website. I'm sorry. I know what you're talking about.
The official
of the Papil Pocket Fisherman.
No. The Pocket Fisherman.
Right. Now it's called the Pocket Fisherman. When they used to advertise it when I was young, it was called the Papil Pocket Fisherman. See, Dwayne, we're not talking about nowadays. We're talking about when he first came out with it. It's called the Papil Pocket Fisherman.
Papil. Pasta maker.
Pasta maker. There's a...
Pocket Fisherman.
There it is. Papil Pocket Fisherman. Man, I'm tired of being right.
Yeah, that's just some guy on eBay, though.
Well, but he's... Well, let's see if this thing comes up. I mean, what is it?
There it is.
I'm not
That's it. You
seeing
don't see it,
it yet. Oh, there it is. Is that, do you having an internet issue there, or is that just their website is loading?
Oh, you know what? It's not showing up on that screen. I'm looking over at my monitoring screen. It showed up on my screen, but it didn't show up on
your
screen.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Let me back out of here. Let me make sure I get charts back, because we need to talk about the charts.
Is the Papil Pocket Fisherman important?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a big fishing guy. Although I think it would be a good idea for my kid because it's just so simple. Dad, can we go fishing?
Sure. Yeah.
I'm not an angler with the boots and the bags and, you know, the poles and a lot of work. Phil says that no, it's not important. So, okay. All right, what do you want
it's
to talk about?
It's not important,
about?
So we're going to move on to it.
I got a chart up right now of the S&P 500 E-mini futures.
Phil, I've been trying to work him over to the markets all morning. Thank you. You know, geez. Gosh, got to get this guy. I mean, we could have gone on about jobs we used to work at. Like, I used to work at a dental office, but I quit because the dentist hurt my fillings. I'm just going to move on right over that.
The all Pope right. is currently hanging out with Fidel Castro.
Well, good for him. All right, here we go. We're in the 1 hour early for the 93 that we talked about. This is the on-time hour is the sixth hour. So if the market, the normal period for the turning point would be in today's sixth hour. So this decline, we're talking about the S&P now. We want to watch this into the sixth hour and any new low that we would make in the fifth hour would be important as well at that point forward to begin looking for potential buy signals for a reversal. It's been a trend day down. They've done this has actually been a very, you know, even though it's been quiet, it has done quite a bit of price movement business. And what I would be looking for is a substantial reversal off of the sixth-hour bottom, plus or minus 1 hour, but we're in the 1 hour early right now, and that's what I'd be trading for. So I'm going to let them continue to test this, you know, the 93, which is it's in our support and resistance panel, but it also is a natural level for today's sixth hour, plus or minus an hour. So this is why in technical analysis, it's always good to have other angles, so to speak, to look at things so that you have many different things that are, you know, hopefully calling for a particular thing to occur, even if nothing is really connected to anything. That's really the argument of the random walkers. Nothing's connected to anything. It all just appears out of nowhere and disappears into nowhere without any connection to the past. It's random. That's the argument that they're making. And we all know that's just silly. You could type that to him and just say, you know, you're just silly. That would get him interested in coming on. He said, I'm sorry, what was that now? What was that message?
Sir, you keep putting us off. Are you rethinking your random walk?
Right. Have you had a little doubt? So are you worried that, you know, some ordinary schlum of a guy that hasn't written a book is going to point something out? He's not worried. He's, like I said, he's faced all this stuff a million times.
Yeah. I mean, he's built his career on this.
Yeah. No, and that's good
why
for him.
He's a professor at Princeton.edu. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. So, let me move on. Let's take a quick look around the markets, and then I'll scoot out of your way here, Dwayne. But
okay.
That's been fun. Did you have a question, or
nope.
Did you say something?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Let's continue on. Let me just look a little bit further on the S&P here. So we're in the 1 hour early on, you know, for this bottom that we talked about, which would be an important place to starting from 93. We could do a roadmap from here, as a matter of fact. And if you want to sign up for Messenger Pro, you can get that roadmap if we give it out in just a little bit here. Let's switch over to some of the other markets that we are routinely watching and see what they're showing us for today. Starting with gold, which is the market that we usually start with here. On the program, we had randomly forecast that March 27th would be a top in the gold market, along with four other markets. And gold did top on March 27th. But as I said yesterday, I'm sorry I said it, because I know some people that did get short, you know, in their own systems and ways, but we were not comfortable. I wanted to see the market get up to $1,700, $17, $1,701. They weren't able to, but now the market has had a good decline here, and so that's a missed trade. So what do you do when you are faced with a missed trade? You throw a chair through a window.
Right.
I mean, that's the way I handle it. So
is there any other way?
No, I don't. I've never heard of any other way. I mean, that's typically what, you know, people have taught me to do. I've actually learned that on my own. Just a good, solid chair right through a window anytime you miss a trade like this. And that'll help you. So that's number one. So that is an important event. They did what they're supposed to do on the downside. Had they touched 1701 or 1700, we would have roadmapped this for a decline to current levels that we're at here. And that would have been a nice little trade. Now, just prior to that, we did, of course, have the bottom that was a very tricky trade, where we were calling for the 41 to hold on daily closes, and then a move up to a 50-point move up to 1690. They did complete that, and they completed it right into that March 27th top. So this was one of those trade into and trade out of trades, but it's too bad, because I would have liked to have been able to give that out. We just didn't go quite high enough, and they are completing the move on the downside. So, you know, I'll go get a chair. If I don't have a chair, I can throw. Some of these chairs in the office are very heavy. You could hurt your back throwing a chair through a window like this. So you want to be careful, you know, with your back. Lift with your legs if you're going to throw the chair through the window. Okay. Any question or comments or anything you want to add to gold, Dwayne? Other than your classic, I'm longer-term bullish on gold, the classic longer-term bullish. Go ahead if you have anything else.
No, that's about it.
Okay, no, fair enough.
That's about it.
Let's see here. I'm still looking at a few charts of gold here. Then we'll move on here.
This little hickey at the bottom of my screen is calling for lower prices. So.
Okay. Well, they certainly are moving lower, and we would expect a good move off of a top. Though I haven't calculated it, I think they've completed the majority of whatever roadmap we could have put out there, but had they reached the 1701 level and triggered that for us. Okay, so having said that, let's move on. I've got an awful lot of gold charts here. Here we go. The bond market. We've talked about the bond market for a couple of weeks, that the week of March 19th would bottom, and the market would have a multi-week advance off that bottom, in spite of the fact that we are currently inside a larger quarterly top. So here's these two forces at work. You have a quarterly top. The market has declined. We now have a weekly bottom, and they're not going to deny that weekly bottom. Even if the market subsequently wants to go lower, and it does, it's going to have to respond to the weekly chart and have a multi-week advance. So I have been suggesting to lightly explore, probe, you know, the long side, not just for a short little snip, but for a substantial attempt multi-week advance. And so you can see today's Wednesday, we're halfway through the week, we're firming up here. That's nice. That's a good early indication that the weekly turning point is in place. So this was the on-time bottom that occurred last week. So we're now in the 1 week late. And we talk about this, that the 1 week late is very good. You don't get it all the time when it lands on that. But we haven't had a 1 week late bottom in the weekly. We had the on-time bottom. But we're running out of time because we only have two trading days left on the 1 week late. So we really do start wanting to look on the long side of bonds here and be ready, even if you're stopped out on a pullback of some kind, which can happen. Markets are tricky before bigger moves. But then immediately get back in if they reconfirm and get back above some important level, because they're going to spring them up real pretty like. So that forecast is just ongoing, and we'll watch that over the next into next week.
Okay, so this is weekly you're looking for a bottom?
Yeah, the weekly on your program, we forecast the last 2 weeks that the week of March 19th would mark a bottom in bonds. The weekly stuff, obviously, it takes a whole week to get through it, and probably gets a little old hearing it, but we're looking for long positions, especially into next week. We'd be looking for long positions, pullbacks to be buyers or breakouts or however, you know, whatever your method happens to be that you're working with. and we'll talk about this next week as we get into it a little bit more.
Okay.
Okay. Let's move on to the euro. Euro is also responding to its March forecast, March 27th, daily market top. All of these are reflected wave. The gold, the euro, the crude, the S&P also topped on March 27th as well. So the euro has had its normal size initial response on the downside. And this market also is very close to an important cycle that we've talked about. I'll bring that up again. I'll bring it up right now because we're sitting right at that spot right now. This week, we talked about this about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that the week of March 26th would be very important in the euro. And I don't have a roadmap put out yet, but we will put one out for this. But it'll probably be out on Monday. If you're new to Messenger Pro, which you can see at pagetrader.com, you might be smart to wait until Monday if you want to try to pick up this, you know, get a free trial or take a 3-day trial. You don't have to have a whole month, but it might be worth looking at a month to watch a number of these come to fruition. The one that we just did in the gold, although it was tricky, was for a 50-point move up on the upside from 40 up to 90. And no doubt a person would have had to have been stopped out once on that trade in order to then re-enter upon the market confirming on that day. I know one or two people specifically that did re-enter, and boy, I'll tell you something, it feels, I mean, you just want to hug somebody that does that right. Because, you know, here you are, the person giving the indication out, you'd like people to be able to use it and get ahead in their account. They do get stopped out, you know, it's painful to know that you gave information, somebody gets stopped out, and then they do the right thing, and when the market closes back above, they buy it, and a couple days later, they're up, you know, 50 points higher. You know, there's got to be a special kind of barbecue or something you hold for people like that. The CFRN, you know, traders did the right thing barbecue. That could be a new thing.
It could.
Sort of a digital barbecue. What, Dwayne?
Yeah, I'll put up an image of a pig roasting on a spit.
Right. A digital barbecue for the people that do things correctly. And so, yeah, the euro, that means that the euro is very close to a critical juncture right now on the upside here. And so we do want to watch carefully. We have a daily top and potentially a weekly turn coming here as well. So next week I'll talk more about the euro for this setup. Right now we're still trading down off of the 27th high that we talked about. Silver also turned on March 27th as well, made a top and reversed. And then finally, back to crude, we've been talking that crude would be making a monthly top, which would be in the month of March, which is running on the same cycle as the S&P is. Crude oil is a worldwide global market. There's people trading it all over the world. And it's not just speculators running the market up. You know, that is one of the greatest nonsense myths that could ever be. Of course, speculators are in the market. And of course, real people that produce are in the market. You've got all these levels of people that are in the market. You've got real producers, and you've got the hedging people, and then you've got the speculative people. You have the, you've got all kinds, the day traders, the longer term traders, the trend followers. You've got all kinds of people in this market. And, but on TV, they, again, not having been really close to it to see for themselves, it's very easy to say, you know, the speculators are running them up. You know, Bill O'Reilly, you know, he's a sharp guy. I respect him. But he's completely wrong when the markets go up and he says, well, that's just the speculators. He doesn't know enough about the markets to know that that isn't really how you can't accurately say that. And it isn't accurate because in order for a market to go up, enormous forces have to be at work to drive a market higher. Enormous in the sense of that it takes a lot more buying than it does selling to get markets to go higher. If it was so easy, the oil companies, the same oil companies that everyone complains has all the billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars, would simply go in and be the speculators, always driving their price up, wouldn't they? I mean, it's just nonsense. They can't. You can't drive the price up by simply being a buyer in the market. It takes enormous forces, much larger than any one group, and there's so many things happening at one time. Otherwise, any hedge fund that has $10 billion can just, you know, move the market. And it just doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. I've used this example so many times that I'm not going to use it again, the Warren Buffett one. You know, the guy came into the market in silver at, you know, $8 when it was down at $8. And he was buying it. And he made it public that he was buying it. So maybe he came in with a billion or so. How many people follow Warren Buffett? How many people like Warren Buffett? A whole lot. More than like Angelina Jolie or Brad Pitt. Because millions and millions and millions of people adore Warren Buffett for the fact that he's, you know, one of the world's greatest, if not the world's greatest, investors. So when he steps into a market, not only does he have his money going in, but he has just enormous slogs of money, just insane amounts that are following his move. And what did silver do, Dwayne?
It declined.
It cut in half. It went down it went from $8 to $4.
Yep.
So if Warren Buffett and his just literally millions of well-heeled followers who bought in any varying size in the silver market can't turn it around and it can still cut itself in half before it finally turns, then speculators don't run the market. Ain't no two gosh darn ways about
it. See, the part that's not made public is the deal he cut with J.P. Morgan to help them get out of some of their short positions.
I didn't know about that.
I didn't either. I just made it up.
Oh, well, you are just on a roll today, Dwayne.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You just need some sleep. So we're looking for a monthly top, and if that monthly top occurs below, this is crude oil now, not silver, below that $115 level, then we're looking for a pretty decent little pullback here. And
you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see crude, this isn't an outright forecast, but, you know, back down at 100 or lower after that. And that may be helpful to President Obama a little later during the year, because gas prices, you know, he's being judged on gas prices. There's no two ways about it. He knows he is. Doesn't matter how many times you try to sweet talk it away. And I happen to agree with President Obama that in a broad sense, this isn't directly his fault. On the other hand, there's many things that he could be doing to, you know, help later. In other words, you start doing things now that helps it later. You can't just keep making arguments that, well, we did this today, that wasn't going to make the prices go down. Yeah, but if you do it for this year or next year, it makes a big difference, because it is, you know, that the markets really do move on supply and demand. So it's very rare that I agree with him, but I do agree with him that this is a worldwide market. There's many, many other forces at work here in the market. So I'm only agreeing with him because he happens to be right.
Well, part of his upcoming campaign strategy is he's going across the country doing a number of these morning zoo radio programs.
Yes.
And he's going to randomly show up at gas stations in small towns, and they'll announce it on the radio, and then everyone will race over to that gas station, and the president is going to fill up your tank on his dime. So,
well, that is, you know, that's actually cute and kind of edgy and all that.
And I just made that up, too. So,
yeah, I'd be surprised to see that happen. President Obama, you know, filling up people's gas tanks.
Well, that one lady, don't you remember that lady at the election? She said, why are you going to vote? They played this clip so many times.
Yes,
it's like,
I do remember
into
that.
Into your brain,
that.
Why are you going to vote for this guy? Because he's going to pay my mortgage and fill my car up with gas.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they've had a bunch of other things like that on TV as well. One other thing I want to say about crude. If you want to really know crude, just listen to some rap music, because that's pretty crude.
That is.
Now, having said that, the date, I mentioned this the other day, the date of March 29th for crude specifically. Remember, the 27th is for these other markets, but the 29th is the crude. And so we want to watch that into tomorrow before a bottom. And I want to, for this is daily, I want to talk about that as we get into it. So remember, I haven't forgotten about the March 29th date. We're going to talk about that. That could very well be a roadmap as well. And then let's
go back to the bonds for a minute, please.
Okay, sure.
There's a question for you. Bruce says, last week the bonds appeared to bottom. Is David sure it's 1 week late?
It's not 1 week late. The on time. Who asked that? Was that Bruce?
That would be Bruce. Let me go to the weekly chart.
Okay. The market bottomed last week, which in Reflected Wave, anybody who has Reflected Wave knows that last week was the on time week for a bottom in the market. I only brought up the 1 week late because we're currently in. Time-wise, we're 1 week late now. We're not bottoming 1 week late. We're just 1 week late now. And that just simply means that the market is going to tend to want to go higher rather than lower into the subsequent weeks.
Okay.
The on-time week did mark the bottom. So if that doesn't answer your question, Bruce, just, you know, flip it to me another way and we'll get it. One last market that we called for a top on March 27th was soybeans. And soybeans topped on the 26th, and they're in decline. So this is a market that, you know, is shortable and tradable. Soybeans is as well. We'll see how this plays out over the next day. This is also, there's quite a few little roadmap setups here. I'm noticing even as I'm talking here, I've got to get some work done here. I've got to get these out. We've got to let the people know.
You got to tell the people, Dave.
You've got to tell the people.
Okay, Richard has a question. No, you're not done yet.
Okay.
One more quickie.
Sorry.
Where'd it go? There it is. All right. Does David think the high is in place for the monthly reflected wave top yet? And if not, what is a possible price level that would make him want to say the high is in?
That is a beautiful question. Okay.
Couple things. I want to defer the answer to that question till after the monthly close for March. I'm not avoiding the question, but it means a lot to me to see where we are. We're at 95 now. We've come down decently from 19. I want to see where the month is. If we close the month above the 1373, the original, or 1383 even, the actual original target, that is a stronger position. The market will still turn on the monthly chart. It's still going to turn. But there is another larger force at work here. And that larger force, would, as we talked about the other day, imply that in the end, not immediately, we still will have our pullback, and we'll talk about dates and times after the month closes, but in the end, we're going to go to 1476 and higher. So that's where the market wants to go. And we're going to have that interrupted, likely to be interrupted by this monthly top, and then a further advance. The decline off the monthly top can still be substantial. It still can be good, and we're going to trade it in the sense that we sell options. You know, for those of you that we have come to the webinar and have seen these statements that we sent out with these options positions, we're still short puts. That means we believe the market's going higher. We've not taken those off. We're just going to hold them until the month of March ends, which is just a few more days. And then our August expiration puts, we're going to start pulling those off so that we're not subject to a larger decline right then. And then if we do get a signal for short, and that would include a price level like he'd asked, then we would start selling premium for shorter term, you know, for a move down. So just want to say that if you'll give me that, I would appreciate that for this market, because this is going to be important here for us to know where the market closes for the month. I believe it will close above the 73 level, and likely the 83 level as well. But let's let them put that in. And then finally, the market right now is real quiet. We've sat on that 93 just a little bit here in the 1 year early on the hourly. I do want to let the market have a little more time down here coming into today's sixth hour, which begins in 30 minutes. We'll see if they can make a, you know, further decline here, but we'll talk about this tomorrow. This is actually a pretty good setup and a normal movement to a natural level. So we'll see. We'll put it all together, and Dwayne, I'll be able to you know, I may be able to, I told you the other day, we may put out a roadmap right on your program as well, just because we're in the mood to. We'll put it out on Messenger Pro as well. So, because we have so many to choose from potentially here. You still with me, Dwayne? Are you there? Now, I don't know if people can hear me. And I don't have the text message. Maybe somebody could type in and let me know if they can hear. Just type in a message. I don't know that I'd see that message. But I don't hear Dwayne. Let's see. I can confirm that my Volt rider demonstrated the extreme acceleration Sunday in Las Vegas. Okay, I hope you guys can hear me. But because I can't hear Dwayne right now, and I don't know if you can hear me, but... when we were at the Reflected Wave seminar, at the end, a group of the guys were going out to the same parking lot that I was parked in, and we got off on the floor where the car was, and about four or five people were there, and I gave them rides in the Volt in the parking garage, and he just typed in, this is from Paul, I can confirm that my Volt ride demonstrated extreme acceleration Sunday in Las Vegas. You know, I don't need to send you $50 for that. That deserves a hug and a kiss, because... I am really happy that he really enjoyed it. It really is. It's wonderful. You'll see. You'll all see when you get a chance to drive one. Dwayne, are you back?
I'm right here. Sorry for the interruption.
Did you see that from Paul?
I did. He really enjoyed it.
I know. See, Dwayne? So I'm not just some freaky little Jewish nut out in Las Vegas. Now other freaky people agree with me.
Yep.
I had five of them. I think, standing out there. Just next. I felt like a guy at Disneyland just getting people on the ride. Anyway,
well,
it was a lot of fun.
Every report I've heard was that people had a great time.
Ah, that's good. Yeah, we did. It was a great group and very bright. I mean, take it for what it's worth. Maybe I've gotten better at teaching it as well, but the fact is that these guys, I was able to show things that in some groups it would have to wait till after the course, you know, in separate one-on-one training to get to that. These special add-on pieces of things that you can do with reflected wave that go beyond just turning points. And we were deep in beyond that in this group, and they were getting it, and we had a great old time. And we had two really great lunches as well. So just wanted to throw that in there. And we gave Chevy Volt rides with extreme acceleration. I think I've said enough.
All right, Dave.
I think I've made my point.
All right, well, go work on those roadmaps.
All right, I'm going to work on the roadmaps. And, Dwayne, thank you for having me on the program. I'll see you tomorrow. And everyone, thanks for the questions. Have a great evening. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right, David. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks again. Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Here's your Social Security card. All right, guys, that's going to do it. Time to get up, get out, and do something different. Watch the 1390/1391, this area here. I know David's got a number here at 93. Our number is slightly below that, 9091. He's waiting for it to get into the 6 hour. So those could all come together. Okay? So, really, you know, again, weekly trading zones are an area, and so let's define an area. Could be a point above it, a point below it, but, you know, look for the turn somewhere in here, and then go to your smaller time frames, maybe your 10K, if you're on the Dow, the 500 contract, and see how you might be able to put that to work. Now, keep in mind, you got a lot of bearish wind at your back here, okay? This market's been falling all day. Really? It's been falling for 2 days, okay? So calling the bottom here can be tricky business, all right? So I would wait for some confirmation that the market really, you know, the first little tick up, I don't know that I'd be jumping on that, okay? Now you can, and you reduce your risk by doing so because you don't have much to risk. If you get in at this zone, 9091, you risk a point, you're right, or you're wrong. You're wrong to the tune of a point, 2 points. If you're right, hey, maybe you catch a ride all the way back up to 99,1400. Hey, if the hourly slices through this and closes below, then don't even think about going long, because that's just not in the cards. Okay? I'll leave this chart up and running. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1 week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.
The following is a presentation of Mosaic, a community of faith, love, and hope. For more information, please visit mosaic.org.
It is great.